You are listening to the Makers Church podcast. For more information about our community, please visit makerschurch.org.
Good morning, Makers Church. How are we doing? Oh my goodness, the morning's already been amazing. I feel like I don't have much to say after all of that. Can we thank the band for leading us and the prayer team and Pastor Mark? Man, it's so good to be back together with you guys. Last week, my wife and I and our family, we got away to the desert for the weekend, and it's kind of part of our family ritual of retreating, of getting away and being together, and it's always a special time for us. But we love being here, and we always miss it when we're gone. And so we're just so grateful for an amazing team of volunteers and staff who can just do an amazing job while we're away. And it's really... there's no big deal when we're gone, which is awesome. Big thanks to Pastor Mark for your message last week, kicking off Reclaimed Rituals. If you guys are here for that, let's clap that up. We're gonna continue that conversation today. And what we decided to do as a church is to step into the season of Lent together. And like Pastor Mark shared last week, for our type, our people, this is really not something that we do a lot. We don't necessarily step into the Christian liturgical calendar all the time and follow it to a T. We aren't very religious when it comes to rituals and routines, but we thought that for us as a church that it would be a really poignant and important thing for us to kind of reclaim some of these traditions that maybe have lost their meaning. Maybe they've lost their way or we've become disconnected with them. And it's not the things in and of themselves that become bad or mundane or stale. It's the way we approach them. And so we thought if we could come together as a church, that we can maybe bring some new energy and that God could breathe fresh breath into some of these things that the church has been doing together for thousands of years. And so what Lent is, if you didn't grow up with this tradition, it's commemorating the 40 days that Jesus spent in the desert as he was starting his ministry, the time where he was tempted by the devil. And it says this in Mark 1:12. It says, "At once the Spirit sent Jesus out into the desert, and he was in the desert 40 days being tempted by Satan. He was with the wild animals and the angels attended him." And the other Gospels give a much longer explanation of what's going on in this season, but Lent is really us reflecting on that. It's around us coming to the place where we figure out what are the disciplines in our lives that will make us whole. What are the things that are going to bring us closer to God? And last week, Pastor Mark kicked it off by talking about fasting. And he challenged all of us together as the church to choose something to fast from. We had an Ash Wednesday gathering at St. Luke's. It was absolutely beautiful. And we talked a bit about how Lent isn't necessarily just about giving something up, but it's oftentimes about replacing it with something else. And so Pastor Mark, it challenged us to do that. I gave up coffee this Lent, which for me is like, man, three kids, a new one at home, I work as a fireman, try to pastor all of you crazy people. Coffee is like the nectar of life. And it's been going good. It's been going good. I'm drinking tea now. I feel more sophisticated. I have my high noon tea now, and it's good. But this morning we want to continue with this concept of solitude. We want to talk about what it would mean for us to practice that. But before we get into the nuts and bolts of that, I want to kind of reestablish this, and we're going to do this every week. What Lent isn't. What spiritual disciplines aren't. And I just want to be really upfront with that because I think the reason they've become so encrusted and so stale is because we approach them the wrong way. And I think for me at least, and for many of you, sometimes we approach religious things or spiritual disciplines as if they are some sort of penance, or if it's about proximity, it's something that's going to bring us closer to God. When you approach it like that and you discover that it actually doesn't do that, then it becomes something that loses its meaning. Because what the scriptures teach is that there's nothing that you can actually do to get closer to God. There's nothing that you can actually do to make God more pleased with you. The scriptures actually say that God is all around us, and even more important than that, God is actually in us. And so what Lent is about, what the rhythms of our faith are about, what spiritual disciplines are about, is us becoming more aware of God. It's about becoming aware of the presence of God that is actually here and now. And so solitude is perhaps one of the, for me, scariest and most important spiritual disciplines that I can practice. How many of you are extroverts in the house? Give me a shout. This sounds like hell on earth, solitude, to you. In fact, we hear that word and we think of solitary confinement, the worst possible punishment for a human being. And we think there's no possible way that could bring me close to God because it's just going to make me angry and irritable and lonely and shamed and all of that. But if you're an introvert, and I'm not going to ask if that's you because you won't shout, the rest of you are like, this is my medicine. Like, you should be up here preaching this sermon. Because I'll be honest, I have almost zero authority to teach you how to practice solitude well. Because I am a people person, I'm an ENFP, I'm a type 7 on the Enneagram, I'm a fill in the blanks, I'm a I on the disc, I've done them all. And they tell me, you love people, you get your energy from people, and being alone is the scariest thing in the world. But I want to establish this idea, and this was really helpful for me, that solitude is not the same as loneliness. See, loneliness, it's an inner reality that can even exist when you're surrounded by people. See, loneliness is something that can infect our souls, that even when we're around people or we're away from people, that it can move us to a place of great distress and even despair at times. What the scriptures do not invite us to is to go find us a place of loneliness that's helpful for our lives. But instead, the scriptures invite us to a place of solitude. Jesus modeled for us what it would look like to move and have a season and a life and a rhythm where solitude is at the core, because it's an inner and an outer reality that can bring us closer to the very heart of God. And he invites us into this. And I love that he doesn't just model it for us or practice it. He invites us into it. In Mark 6:31, he says, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. How many of you just need some rest? Like, parents in the house, people with insomnia, people struggling with something. And I love that this idea of solitude, to me, it's a deeper level of rest, which, by the way, God invites us into, and he tells us to practice it regularly. He gives us the Sabbath to practice rest, to retreat, to recuperate, to recover from the craziness of life. And what solitude is, it's a step deeper into that. It isn't just rest. It isn't just sitting in the lazy boy and relaxing. It isn't just sitting in the floaty pool with all your friends. It's a more intentional way to get away. And Jesus models it for us over and over and over in the scriptures. But I was thinking about what this would look like for me. And I work as a fireman, and one of the things that helps us do our job really well, which would seem insignificant, is on the fire engines, we have these things called David Clarks, and they're headsets that we wear, and there's a mic that comes around, and you'll see them in helicopters and airplanes and stuff like that. And the reason they're so important is, first, they're noise canceling. They cancel and they drown out the noise of the siren and the traffic and all of the other things that would distract you from being able to get your head in the right space to go do good work when we get a call. But the other thing is that it's a communication tool. It allows us to talk together on the rig, to come up with a good plan, for the captain to give us orders to do all of that. So they're noise canceling, and they make a direct line of communication. And they also help us, like, solve all the world's problems as we're driving around town. And oftentimes there's inappropriate things being said. And I think my buddy Matt over here, who's a fire captain, said, imagine a book called Stories by David Clark. Like, if David Clark could tell stories, like the stuff that firemen talk about on the fire engine. But nevertheless, I had a season of my life where I was, like, deeply addicted to my phone. And I'm still got some struggles with it, but I was, like, really, really bad, to where I would be on the rig, and this was when I was a firefighter. I wasn't driving, so don't worry. But I would be on the rig, and I would shove my phone into the headset, and it would hold my phone in place, and I would click the mute button on the headset, and I would, like, take phone calls. I'd be, like, talking to Mark or Shalise or running the church from the back of a fire engine, and the guys would be trying to get through to me, and I'm, like, completely tuned out. because I'm distracted. I'm not engaged at all. All of a sudden, a box of like medical aid gloves will fly and hit me in the head, and I would be like, oh wow, I'm supposed to be here. And they like had a whole intervention with me, and they made me leave the phone at work and couldn't take it on the rig and all of that. But I wonder for us, how many of us need an intervention when it comes to being distracted, when it comes to living in constant chaos and noise and distraction. And I think the reason that Jesus models this for us and invites us into this is it's a bit of an intervention. He knows that if we're left to ourselves, that we will fill every space and every nook and cranny and every piece of our lives with something, because we're all searching for meaning and purpose. And the more we do, the more we feel like we accomplish, the more it feels like we're worthy of something. But Jesus instead invites us into solitude. Jesus sought solitude over and over and over. He constantly sought it from the time of his baptism to the time he went to the cross. And he went to the desert. He went to the wilderness. He went to the quiet place for all sorts of different reasons. It's how he began his ministry and how he ended it. It's how he tackled tough issues. It's how he got away from annoying people. It's how he made decisions. It's how he mourned and wept. It's how he got close to the source, the Father, and could become empowered and strengthened. It says in Luke 5:15, it says, the news about him had spread all the more, so that the crowds of people came to hear him and to be healed of their sickness. But Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. In Mark, it says this. It says, very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Simon and his companions went to look for him, and when they found him, they exclaimed, everyone is looking for you. I love that Jesus, when he was needed most, he just ducked out. He slipped out the back door. He just kind of got away and disappeared. Even when he was in most demand, the scriptures say over and over and over that Jesus would be in a crowd, that people would be pressing up against him, that they were ready, they were primed, they were asking him to heal them, they were asking him to help them, they were ready, their hearts were turned towards him. And even in their greatest need and even in the greatest opportunity, Jesus still backed away and found space to get away. Even when it seemed like it would matter the most, but Jesus understood. Jesus understood that the need was endless. Jesus understood that the need was endless, and that if he was going to do any good, he had to come with a source of strength and power. And he had to get away so that he could recharge and refuel and give the best of himself to others. And I wonder how many times we run ourselves so ragged and we think that the need is around, so we just got to respond to it all the time. We got to be there for people. We got to be there for this. We got to do this or do that. And we just keep giving the scraps of ourselves away to others. And Jesus is inviting us to this practice, this discipline of solitude for a reason. He says this, the scripture says this in Mark 6:30. It says, the apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all that they had done and taught. Then, because so many people were coming and doing and coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, he said to them, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. I love that Jesus didn't even demand nor desire that his followers would work to the point of exhaustion and burnout. That even though the need was great, that even though people were coming and going and they were doing all of good things, he still had an intervention. He interrupted them and he pulled them out and he said, let's go get some rest. Let's get some place of solitude. They were skipping meals. They weren't even eating. Have you been there? I don't know about you, but I know so many friends, most of them in the front row, that have been in this place in their lives. where they're skipping meals and they're working so hard and they're doing good things and they're reporting back, look at all these amazing things I'm doing. And several times as their pastor, as their leader, I have to tap them out and say, take a rest, take a break, go get some solitude. And I'm the worst one to tell them to do it because I do not model that for them well all the time. But the scriptures and Jesus is calling us into this. See, the thing about solitude is that it's noise canceling. It's like a David Clark headset. If you don't disrupt it, if you don't shove your phone in there and hit the mute button, then it can become this noise canceling environment where we can hear from God. So many times we're looking for God in the wind, and we're looking for God in the storm and in the earthquake, and the still small voice of God, it gets missed because we never stop. Sometimes we even have a great prayer life, but you spend all of it talking. God, I need this. God, I need that. Would you do this? Would you do that? And God is desperately trying to get through to us, but he needs us to be in a place, in an environment, in a state of mind where we can actually hear from him. How do we do that? How do you do that? I mean, do you go away to the desert for 40 days? I would love that. As long as I had enough fuel for the motorcycles and enough water, I'd be good. 40 days would be amazing. But how do busy people like us practice solitude? How does a guy who's got three kids and a wife and a church and a job and I live with people for my job. I mean, it's ridiculous. I just spent like the last 2 days with some of my best friends on a staycation. It was 10 adults, 10 kids, and it was chaos, and I loved it. I'm like, I love that. That's my vacation. That's the way I like to rest. I'm full. I'm charged. It was amazing. So how could a guy like me or people like you find space in your lives to retreat into solitude? I mean, you're going to have to find your own way, but here's some silly ways I do it. I wake up early in the morning. I wake up early in the morning because there's no other sense of solitude anywhere to be found in anything close to me. And I wake up at 4:30 in the morning, not all the time, but when I need it. And I just sit. I just sit with God. The other best investment that I ever bought is a pair of noise-canceling headphones. I told my wife, when we drive to the desert and we go vacation, we have a motorhome and we go to the desert and we go to the mountains and do all this stuff. But it's if you're not a car person, this won't make sense. But it's a gas engine, so it's like high RPM. It just roars really, really loud. So you can't even talk to each other as you're driving. And my wife feels like a flight attendant anyways because the kids need something every 4 seconds. And so she's up making sandwiches and giving out peanuts and all this stuff. And I'm like, so we just established, I said, hey, babe, when we drive, I'm not here. I'm just your chauffeur. So this is illegal, so don't tell anybody. But I put my noise-canceling headphones on because the motor is so loud. Anyways, I'm sure I could hear a cop car better if I have those on. And it drowns the kids out, it drowns my wife out, it drowns everybody out. It sounds mean, but this is a moment of solitude for me. And when we drive together and we're going far, I don't put a podcast on, I don't listen to music, I just, that white noise that noise-canceling headphone gives me is my place. And I'll tell you what, the loudest I've heard God is sometimes just driving with my headphones on, listening to nothing. But you gotta find your thing. You gotta find your thing, and if you're like me, you got to schedule it in. You gotta have margin in your life. If you wanna wake up early, you gotta go to bed earlier because you can't sacrifice your sleep for it. This sleep is all part of it. Like getting rest, being refreshed, being renewed. And I am not an expert, but I have seen value after value after value as I engage this discipline. This is for me the one I need more than anything, and it's the hardest one because you could even find yourself in the quietest possible space ever, but your mind is so loud. See, you can find yourself in silence, but you won't necessarily be able to quiet your thoughts. And so for me, one of the most helpful things is just repetitive prayer. One word, one phrase, one thing that I can say that will quiet my brain long enough to be able to sit in true silence. And I don't know what's going to work for you, but I can highly encourage you to find space in your life. All you introverts are like, I got it. But I don't know that you necessarily do, because just because you don't like to be around people, just because you've fasted from people, just because you've cut people out of your lives, doesn't mean that you're actually trying to hear from God. So don't pat yourself on the back too quickly, because remember, it's not just about stepping away from something, it's about engaging something. How do we get to the place where we can hear the still small voice of God? The other thing that solitude does is it's a recipe for humility. It helps us maintain perspective on our place in the grand scheme of things. See, when I go away to the desert for the weekend and I come back and everyone's like, it's cool. Church was great. Everything's fine. Nobody quit. Like, it's all good. Place didn't burn down. I go, oh, cool. I guess you really don't need me. Awesome. When you step away from something for long enough to realize that the earth is going to continue to spin on its axis if you aren't there, it's a humbling experience. Solitude can be a recipe for humility. To know that the world will go on even if you step back enough to be missed. I think so many times we will only move to the place of solitude when we've packaged everything up and we've finished something, we've put a bow around it, and we can walk away from it. That was complete, or that task is done, or this is all finished, or it's in a good spot. But no, you've got to pull yourself out before all of that just so that you can see it's going to be okay. Just so that you can see it's going to be fine. I remember years and years ago when we were leaving our church in Los Angeles to move back to San Diego and start this. And I remember vividly feeling like, I don't think this is going to go well for you guys when I leave. Like, I thought, like, who's going to do all the stuff we do? And my buddy, David Arcos, who actually Patrick met this week, he took a glass of water and he put his finger in the water. And he goes, dude, this is us with you here. And he took it out and he goes, this is us with you gone. Like, we're good. Like, we love you, but we're going to be fine without you. And I think that this is perhaps one of the greatest lessons for those of you who are like type A, need to be needed, need to make an influence, need to be significant. No one in here is probably like that. But that's what this does. I love Charles de Gaulle says, the graveyards are full of indispensable men. People who just thought that they were needed in some environment. And don't get me wrong, you have value, you have worth, you contribute greatly to humanity. God wants you to be your best. You add so much when you're there, but you're going to be okay when you're gone. When you step out. 1 Peter 5:6 says, humble yourselves. This is a great way to do it. Practice solitude. Humble yourselves, therefore, under God's mighty hand, that he lift you up in due time. Cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. I think it's important for us to know that we can come to God when we're anxious, when we have a need, when we're overwhelmed, when we are in that space that we're just spinning our wheels, that we can step away and go to a place where we can hear from God. Cast all your cares, cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. And I want to close with this. Perhaps this is one of the most profound things that I came across as I was studying this idea. Mark 1:12, as it talks about Jesus stepping into the wilderness. In fact, it says, at once the Spirit sent Jesus there, which seems mean. Like, the Spirit sent Jesus to the desert. And he was in the desert for 40 days being tempted by Satan. He was with wild animals and angels attended him. I mean, I hear that and I go, man, the way I've always understood this is that when Jesus was in the desert and he was by himself fasting for 40 days, like disconnected from everyone. He was malnourished. He hadn't eaten. I'd always read this thinking that Jesus was at the weakest point he could possibly be when the devil came to tempt him. That he was broken down, that he was beat down, that he was weak. And we can look at that story and we think, well, it's an amazing thing that while he was at his weakest, he didn't give in to the temptation. While he was at his weakest, he didn't give in to the temptation. But after I look at this and I ponder it a little longer, I actually think that that's a misunderstanding. That going to the place of solitude, that going to the desert, that going to the wilderness is going to make you in your weakest state. See, I avoid solitude because I think it means that I'm weak. I avoid it because I think it means that I'm retreating from something, or I'm giving up, or I'm stepping back. And when you're wired like me, not being around people and not being around chaos is a scary place. But I think what's happening here is the Spirit sent Jesus into solitude because he knew it would make him the strongest. Jesus was sent into the desert because he knew that God knew the devil was going to come to tempt him. And he wanted him to be prepared to respond with the most power and the most strength that he could possibly conjure up. And it came from being in the quiet place where he was dependent on the Father, with no other distractions, no other options, but God and God alone. And I wonder for us this morning, what would happen in our lives if we approached the places of solitude, not as a degrading or humiliating thing, but as a place of power and of strength, where if we know that we wanted to give the best of ourselves away to others, and if we wanted to stop spinning our wheels for no good reason, and even just stop trying to do all the things, all the good things, all the bad things, and say, no, I want to come from a position of power and of strength, and that only comes from the very giver of life. His name is Jesus. And when we can step back and step into the places where we can hear from him, we become strong and powerful. And God so desperately wants us to be in that space. And I don't know what that is for you. I don't know how you're going to carve that space out and how you're going to find margin in your life and rhythm in your life, but I know that for me, I need it more than I've ever needed it. And so this season has become a great invitation to engage these things, to practice these things. So I just want to encourage you this morning, it doesn't have to start with much. Buy a pair of headphones. Put them on. Take a drive. Take a long shower. I mean, if you're an extrovert and you're wired like me, just get started with small steps. Wake up 20 minutes earlier. Calendar a day to get away and go hike like Mark did this week. By yourself. But not just to practice the rhythm of ritual, but to practice the discipline of hearing from God. He wants to speak. He is here. He's around us. And as we practice these disciplines, we become more aware of it. And when that happens, we get to play a part in making heaven on earth, responding to the things that Mark talked about this morning, responding in love, with power and with strength. Let's pray.
You are listening to the Makers Church podcast. For more information about our community, please visit makerschurch.org.